Mr. Kratz, are you with us here today?
Yes, sir.
Very good. And Mr. Mercure, you are here today. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Very good. Mr. Kratz, then you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And good morning. May it please the court.
My name. Move your mask.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Gregory Kratz with the law firm of Smith Schaefer Davis. We represent Donald Ice in this case. He is the defendant and appellant on this case, which is an appeal from the District Court of Richardson County and Judge Julie Smith. I will note, however, in this case, that I was not the attorney that tried nor wrote the brief. In this case, that was the Honorable Judge Jeffrey Gertig, who has now become a judge, and I will attempt to fill his shoes. So I may have some slightly different arguments and some different takes than he did in his brief. There are three assignments of error in this case. Firstly, that the district court erred by classifying non-marital property as a marital asset. Second of all, that the district court erred by not dividing the marital estate in an equitable manner and abused its discretion by ordering Don to make an equalization payment to Linda. And lastly, that the district court erred by partially granting plaintiff's motion to alter or amend the judgment and increase the amount of equalization. I will start with our last assignment of error and then get to the other two in a minute. The May 22nd, 2020 order from Judge Julie Smith ordered an increase in the equalization payment, which was already at $165,000, increased it by $11,400. And essentially what it did was impose a 60-40 farm share lease on the parties. However, this order did not take into account any farm inputs, any costs, any taxes associated with the production of crop that year.
Did your client put on any such evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe they did include evidence in that, and all of which these items were paid for by my client. The purpose of such arrangement is to compensate the landowners for the burdens of ownership, none of which Linda participated in, and thus we do not believe that she should reap the benefits in that. In the very least, however, we believe that the costs, the inputs, and the taxes should be shared equally among the landowners as well as through the tenants according to the order. The district court did not account for these costs. They picked a number, of the price of the grain and separated it out, and their analysis went no further than that.
What is our standard of review?
It's de novo on the record. So we and the court is able to make an independent decision based upon the facts and the evidence that is on the record.
Ultimately, is it not whether or not the district court abused?
Yes, discretion and that discretion. Is it's whether or not they abused discretion and ruling the way that they ruled. But the court determines that is able to determine on its own the de novo on the record standard.
Did the court use your client's testimony on the value of grain to come up with the value?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe they my client's testimony was somewhat shaky. It wasn't certain, obviously. That was a little while later, and the price of grain changes dramatically, and so it wasn't. But however, there was no expert testimony, but it was based on a reasonable amount, and we're not contesting that the amount of what the court thought the grain was worth is that we're not contesting that at all.
Thank you.
So let me get to
your contest is with the 40-60 split.
No, Your Honor, it is with the The share that the share of the costs, the farm inputs, and the taxes that were paid by my client should be shared, you know, proportionally with the other landowner.
Does that figure into a 40-60 split?
Not necessarily. And no, most of the 40-60 splits include inputs and costs, and all of them, the landlord pays the taxes. In this case, my client paid the property tax.
So what is the amount that you think the judge should have given?
I don't have that.
Advice or?
Yeah, I don't have that off the top of my head. I would have to go back and review the testimony to determine how much that would have been.
Can you tell us in a global sense on all of the assignments of error, what difference your position vis-a-vis what the court did would make in terms of money?
Well, Your Honor, and that would be getting to the first and second cause of error, and I believe that it would make a dramatic difference as far as the equalization payment would be lowered considerably. And probably by, you know, what I would estimate at least $100,000. The our other assignments of error have to do with the error in the classification of non-marital property as marital property. You know, generally, property brought into the marriage is considered non-marital property unless it's inextricably mixed or commingled with marital property.
Isn't that what the trial court found, that it was commingled?
Yes, Your Honor, and we're assigning that as an assignment of error, and that it was not commingled because, in addition to that, if separate property remains separate and traceable, commingling does not exist.
Whose burden is it to show it's not marital property?
It is the burden of the party claiming that it's not marital property. And so the separate property, when it remains segregated or traceable, commingling does not exist. The parties in this case took great lengths to keep their farm money separate from the town money, as they described it. The farm money, the farm assets, the farm income, everything, the farm liabilities, everything was kept separate, paid for a separate farm account.
Court judge.
She had interpreted the facts that because there was a, you know, part of the loan on the farm was paid during the marriage, part of the plaintiff had used some inherited money to remodel the home, and because of that, that commingled and became a, you know, the court reasoned that it became a marital property.
Are you disputing those facts?
We're not disputing the facts. What we are disputing is the fact is the approach that the court took that made it just lumped it into one marital property. And we believe that they could have taken an alternate approach and kept it separate, whereby having part of the property marital, part of the property non-marital. Don had a premarital contribution of approximately $34,000 in the early 80s. This was his the equity that he had in the house, or in the farm, I should say, before the marriage in 1984. The purchase price of the house was $88,500. That equates to 38.5% of the farm. Now, what we believe the court should have, and the correct way to have done it, would to have set that aside and that portion be premarital asset, and then the other 61.5% to be considered marital. I believe that it's inequitable to hold that Don's $34,000 investment in an appreciable asset 40 years ago only nets him $34,000 in premarital contribution today. $34,000 in the early 80s is not $34,000 today. And we believe that it is equitable for the court to recognize and give him the benefit of that investment over time. While at the same time, lend a $60,000 investment in a depreciable home remodel that at the time of the divorce was already 10 years old, swallows up that gain. We believe and puts my client in a situation where he either has to to sell or get a loan. And at this point, he's 75 years old and he's not going to be able to do another 30-year loan on his farm to pay off his ex-wife. I believe that the court should have a preference for keeping assets and not liquidating assets. The equalization payment.
Can you cite a case for that proposition?
I cannot, Your Honor.
Don't we have plenty of divorce cases where, in order to make an equalization payment, someone needs to sell a piece of property?
Yes, you do. But when, in the alternative, when there's an option available to avoid that, I believe in the interest of equity, the court should. And I believe my time is up. So, Your Honors, if there are any more questions, I will take those. Otherwise, I will submit it to the court and ask for an independent determination on the division of property as well as the equalization payments.
Thank you very much. Pure, good morning to you again, and you may approach and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court. My name is Steve McCure. I'm representing the appellee, Linda Ice, in this particular court. The initial points I would make to the court was that we don't believe there's any abuse of discretion by the trial court, by Judge Smith, and her determination of classification of property in this particular matter. We also don't believe that the appellant ever carried his burden of proof to prove farm number, track number one of the farm was non-marital property. It's important for the court to note that Judge Smith did a comprehensive evaluation of the assets in this particular matter, particularly track number one, the farm that the appellant is arguing about here today. And I note a couple of important notes for the court's reference. Mr. Ice bought this property in 1979 before he married my client in 1984. At the time that he bought the property, he took out a mortgage for $8,000. Thereafter, he married my client in 1984. She worked throughout that marriage. In fact, from 1984 until 2015, she was continuously employed. The court correctly determined that most of the mortgage was paid off the marital funds during the course of this marriage. In fact, if you look at the record, in 2005, the parties refinanced that mortgage, my participating in signing a note for it, to refinance it for another about $40,000. So in that whole time period, Mr. Ice had not paid hardly anything on the original mortgage. And thereafter, it was being paid with marital funds. That's really what was happening in this situation.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. Is it your position that because the parties throughout the marriage serviced the loan, that whatever contribution appellant had made prior to the marriage is eclipsed?
Well, I think the court determined that any premarital or any contribution that he had made before the marriage was offset by the $6,000 of monies that my client invested from her inherited funds to improve the residence on that same farm. So that's really what the court did at that time, was they said they offset each other. And that, and when the court made a determination this was marital property, it also took into the fact that both parties had made significant contributions to the property during the course of the marriage.
Wouldn't you characterize the property and then do the math? It either is or isn't premarital in favor of appellant, and then you can do the math after that?
No, I think the court made the correct computation or calculation that it was marital property based upon the total contributions both parties had made to that property, and that its initial determination was that it was marital property.
Given that it was acquired before the marriage, wouldn't it have to be part, at best from your client's perspective, partly non-marital and partly marital?
I don't believe so. I think that the court could make a calculation that if, in fact, it took into account what supposedly the money was that he put into it and offset that. Basically, that's what the judge said, was that it was offset by the over $6,000 of inherited money that she put into it to improve the residence on that same tract of real estate. And then it took into account, I think, the total debt that was involved in this matter and the fact that most of that had been paid off with marital funds through the course of the marriage. And that's really how the court looked at it.
It's building on Judge Miller-Lerman's question. Your approach is really a comparing dollars to dollars rather than starting with what did he have the date of the marriage.
And I think that's what the court did in this situation. Yes. And I don't think that was an abuse of discretion. I think it was to take into account the equities of the situation and looking at the total picture. Keep in mind, when you look at that, is that Mr. Ice actually quit working in 1998, never worked thereafter. My client worked until 2015, so another 17 years after he retired, she was still working. And she also paid off most of the mortgage that they had to refinance in 2005. So I think that it's quite clear, and there were also other things that went on throughout their marriage using that same property as collateral. And it was being paid off with my client's funds. So I think the equities of the situation were such that that's what the court determined in this situation, that it was no longer a non-marital asset, but certainly had become a marital asset by virtue of the efforts of both parties.
Does the record show how much was still owed on that property when they got married?
I think that it was a determination that he had, that the court determination that he had $34,000. The total amount was $88,000 that he actually had taken out a mortgage for initially. So I think if you do the math from that, you'd figure out probably about $54,000 was still owing on it.
So is this court or the district court at some point after you determine when non-marital asset is a marital asset, where the code is enough that it's a marital asset?
Well, I think the burden is always, of course, on the party that's claiming it's a non-marital asset. And in this situation, I think he failed in that regard because of the facts that we have in front of us. Now, each particular case obviously depended upon the facts, but in this situation, I think it's quite clear that the court could correctly determine that that could not be classified as a non-marital asset. And that's really what the whole situation is about. And I think that's the evidence supports Judge Smith's determination. And I don't think there was any abuse of discretion whatsoever in her calculation.
You heard your opponent characterize the amount which he thought the difference by what he claims were errors would be. What do you agree that the subject we've been talking about, this piece of property, is the major piece of it? Source of controversy before.
Certainly the track number one, this the farm was the major course or major focus of the court's inquiry in this thing. Yeah.
Can you refresh our memory factually?
Well, the court awarded the appellant, the court awarded him track number one. My client got track number two. And he was ordered to pay an equalization payment of about $165,000 originally. And then the court amended that after I filed a motion because the court had not taken into account the income that had been earned after the dissolution had filed. Because he took all of the grain income for 2019, he sold half of it, still had half of it on hand when the trial was held. And he testified specifically about how much grain was still on hand and what the price of that would be. The court applied basically a 60-40 calculation in determining how much my client should have her equalization payment increase by, which was $11,400.
Council today argued that that split, that 40-60 split on that grain, not taken into expenses and so forth, zero response to that.
Well, I think that the calculation the court used at that time was, I don't know that there was any testimony about who had actually paid any taxes. In fact, I think the taxes were still owing for 2000. This is the 2019 crop year, and we were having a trial in 2020. Those taxes had not yet been paid. So the 2019 taxes didn't become due until May and September of 2020. So they hadn't been paid yet at that point.
So whose burden?
And the court had already awarded those tracts of real estate. So it assumed that those parties would pay, whoever got the property was going to pay those taxes on that property. And that's why they wouldn't, I don't think the taxes would be relevant to the calculation of, you know, how much they should receive.
Whose burden was it on the grain as to whether or not that's?
Well, I think that the court made a determination it was marital property because of the fact that he testified about how much was on hand, and simply the court had not, had, my motion was because the court had failed to take that into account in its final order. And I think as far as the burden is concerned, once the evidence is in front of the court about how much income had been earned from the marital property, then the court had, could make a calculation at that time that it should be divided. Thank you. I appreciate it. We ask that the court basically affirm Judge Smith's decision and allow this to be concluded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have any time for rebuttal? Very good, counsel. You are excused. Thank you for your participation today. Court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Moore versus Nebraska Accountability and Disclosure Commission.